Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Big E here. This is Law for Virginia Law Enforcement Officers. What do you need to know as a law enforcement officer to better strengthen and serve your community here in the Commonwealth of Virginia? And this is episode 101. We've done 101 episodes, and that's pretty amazing, I think. Today's episode, I want to talk about probable cause to search a phone. We had a case from the Fourth Circuit, a ruling this week, that I think is really interesting. And it reflects a ruling and a view of the courts that's not just in the Fourth Circuit. There's a Virginia Court of Appeals case we're going to talk about, and then another Fourth Circuit case from earlier this year that I think give us some real insight in how not just, you know, if you're in a traffic stop, what would give you probable cause to seize someone's phone. But also, you know, if you're someone who's writing a search warrant, how do you articulate what the probable cause is to find someone's, to seize someone's phone? Or if you're executing a search warrant and phones aren't part of that search warrant, nevertheless, if you came upon a phone, what would give you probable cause to seize that device? So I think regardless of where your position is as far as a law enforcement officer, patrol officer, investigator, whatever, hopefully today's episode will be useful for you. And I just want to say, by the way, having done 101 episodes now, thank you so much to everybody who listens, to everybody who has come up and talked to me about the podcast. This podcast was your idea. This was something that you guys brought to me over the years. So many times law enforcement officers in the Commonwealth have asked me, how do I learn more? How do I get better? How do I improve my knowledge? And that's inspiring to me as somebody who teaches and has so much contact with law enforcement. I just think I'm always inspired by your commitment to being better. And I find that throughout Virginia, whether I'm talking to police, sheriff's deputies, patrol officers, detectives, fire marshals, investigators, you know, all over, whenever I'm talking to people, they always want to learn more and they're always hungry to learn more. And that's why I started this podcast many years ago now. And here we are at 101 episodes and still going strong. So thank you to you guys for listening and for encouraging and wanting this podcast. I think that's great. And I'm happy to keep delivering it as long as you find it useful. And so let's dive into today's episode. Let's dive into the material today. The case today is a case called U.S. versus Davis. And it's a case from the Fourth Circuit. It's a published case from the Fourth Circuit from January 25th. And if you don't remember the difference in published and unpublished, a published case is a case where the Fourth Circuit has decided this case is so important that we're going to view it as controlling authority. In other words, this is a case that anyone could rely on in federal court. It doesn't necessarily control in state court. It's sort of informative in state court. But we're going to see in a moment, this very much reflects a ruling from Virginia court this summer. So what happens in Davis? In Davis, the defendant who's selling drugs gets himself in trouble by moving into a house where other people live, and these people are engaged in unlawfully buying and selling firearms. The story isn't all that important, except to say that ATF uncovers that the owner of the house and one of the defendant's roommates are involved in this scheme to buy and sell firearms unlawfully. And they obtain a search warrant to search the house. What's important to know is that they don't know that Davis is involved in this scheme. In fact, Davis doesn't appear to be involved directly in this scheme. He's just selling drugs on the side, I think. He's sort of wrong. It seems from the facts that he's just sort of in the wrong place at the wrong time. But Davis, who lives there, does have drugs and does have firearms. And the search warrant is a search warrant that authorizes law enforcement to look for drugs and look for firearms. It also allows them to search and seize cell phones. So officers execute the search warrant. They go inside the residence, and they quickly find a bunch of firearms, unsurprisingly. They go to one of the bedrooms, and they find that it's Davis's bedroom. They know it's Davis's bedroom because they have his ID card in it. It has objects belonging to him. It has a phone there, and he identifies the phone as being his. So for lots of reasons, they know that it's Davis's bedroom. In Davis's bedroom, they also find a large quantity of drugs, and they also find a firearm. They also find, which is a, as I remember, I think it's a pistol grip shotgun. It's loaded. They also find a bunch of currency and so on. So his wallet, his ID, all that stuff is in the bedroom. They know it's his bedroom. And so they seize the drugs, they seize the gun, and they seize the phone. While Davis is in custody as well, he's obviously being detained during the execution of the search warrant, he also tries to stuff a bag of what appear to be drugs inside of an air vent. And the officers observe him do that. So they arrest him at that point as well. The case goes to trial against Davis. And Davis moves to suppress, and he has three arguments he raises. One, he argues that the search warrant lacks probable cause, that evidence of a crime will be found at the residence. So he attacks the search warrant itself. Number two is he argues that the officers lacked specifically probable cause to search for and seize controlled substances. And thirdly, he argues that the officers lacked probable cause to search for and seize phones, specifically his phone. And the district court, the trial court, denies the motion to suppress. He pleads guilty, but he asks to retain his right to appeal, which the court grants, and he appeals to the Fourth Circuit. And so the Fourth Circuit considers those three issues. Did law enforcement have probable cause to look for the evidence of the crimes, right? The possession of a gun and possession of drugs. Was there specifically search probable cause to search for and seize drugs, and was there probable cause to search for and seize phones? Regarding the first issue, which is there probable cause to search for any crime at all? Again, I don't want to belabor this too much. It's not really the focus of our conversation today, but the court says, yeah, definitely there was, in this case, based on the facts, probable cause to search for and seize guns and ammunition based on the ATF's investigation. They had investigated the case, learned that people inside the house were unlawfully buying and selling guns, and so the court satisfied here that there is probable cause to search for and seize guns and ammunition. And the reason that's important is that they then examine the question of, was there probable cause to search for drugs? And they basically say, you know, we don't really have to answer that in this particular case, because all of the drugs were drugs that the police found while lawfully searching for guns and ammunition. In other words, all of the drugs were in places where the police would lawfully have been able to look for guns or ammunition. So they don't really answer that question in this case. And I mention that because it does appear from the facts that the search warrant is a little light on probable cause for searching for drugs. There doesn't appear to be a lot of explanation as to why the police thought there were going to be drugs there. And so rather than diving into that issue, the court simply says, well, if you had probable cause to look for guns and drugs, you could look in all these places that they looked, and they found drugs, They had probable cause to look for guns and ammunition, so they lawfully could look in all the places where they found drugs. And then when they found drugs, those drugs were in plain view. And so the court says this is simply a plain view issue and rejects the argument that the officers didn't have probable cause to look for drugs. But what that sets up, and this is the purpose of our conversation today, what this sets up is a problem, because then what's the probable cause to seize Davis's phone? We know that Davis is not involved in the gun running activity. The officers don't appear to be able to rely on the search warrant's request for drugs. So they're finding drugs in plain view. What gives them the lawful authority to seize Davis's phone? And this the court looks at and says, well, you know, the search warrant mentions phones, but it doesn't really explain why it is that you could seize a phone. And I want to pause for a second and remind you, we talked a while back about a case, a published case from February from the Fourth Circuit, called U.S. versus Suiero. And Suiero is a case from February of 2023, where the court examined whether or not a search warrant lawfully could seize a cell phone in a case where the defendant was making threats against his prior employer, and police obtained a search warrant for threatening somebody under Virginia Code 18.2-60. The police obtained a search warrant for Suiero's residence, and in the affidavit, they described that they wanted to search the defendant's residence and seize any and all phones and computers and laptops and any device that's capable of storing data. And they execute the search warrant in a house where the defendant resided with a bunch of other people. So he rented a private bedroom, but he lived, just like Mr. Davis, he lived with a lot of other people. When they get inside the house, they locate the defendant's bedroom, just like with David. And they figure out which bedroom is his, and he has digital devices, including a phone. And they execute the search warrant. They seize three laptop computers, three external hard drives, a phone as well. Executing the search warrant on these digital devices, they find child abuse material, and he moves to suppress the warrant. And he relies very heavily on a case called U.S. versus Griffith, which is a very influential District of Columbia case where a judge had said police can't simply just seize cell phones in any search warrant in any drug case just because they're phones. You have to be able to explain, number one, why you think the phone would belong to the defendant, and number two, why would the phone have evidence of a crime? And simply saying, well, in all drug cases, you can seize a phone in any situation, that's too sweeping. And the court suppressed that evidence. And it's interesting because U.S. versus Griffith, the law enforcement officers had a search warrant. And you would think, oh, well, at least they could rely on the search warrant in good faith. But the D.C. court thought, no, there was no good faith reliance because any officer should know that you can't just seize a phone without even knowing whether the defendant owned a phone, without being able to articulate that he had a phone, without being able to articulate why you think a particular phone would belong to him and why that phone would have evidence of a crime on it. So the district court in the Suiero case denies the motion to suppress. And Mr. Suiero appeals. And here in the Suiero case from back in February in 2023, the court looks at the affidavit. They say, well, we know he rents a bedroom. We know he owns a computer in the bedroom because he's been issuing threats against people. So he's engaging in a crime that necessarily involves a digital device. And so the court found it substantially likely that his computer and related devices would be in the room because the defendant had since become incarcerated, was locked up, and so they figure, well, his devices have got to still be in his residence. So the court here distinguishes the case from Griffith, from the D.C. case. They don't say the D.C. case is wrong. They don't say the D.C. case shouldn't control. They don't say who cares what D.C. thinks. This is Virginia. This is the Fourth Circuit. What they say is, you know, here in this case, we don't think it's overbroad to include mobile phones in a search warrant when the defendant's alleged crime is sending threats by email to his former employer, and that requires the use of an electronic device. And the court quotes a statistic from 2014 from the U.S. versus Riley and U.S. versus Worry case. More than 90% of American adults own a cell phone. And so, like the court in Griffith, the court says, just because phones are ubiquitous, that alone doesn't allow you to search for and seize any phone. However, in this case, in the Suiero case, the warrant was logically limited in scope to seize only his devices, and it protected against any exploratory rummaging because it said we were looking for evidence of his phone threats on that digital device, which we had evidence that he was engaged in. And so the court in Suiero says that that search warrant was a lawful search warrant. So that takes us back to the Davis case, right? So in the Davis case, we already know that the Fourth Circuit wants to know, why is it do you think that this phone is going to have evidence of a crime on it? It can't just be, oh, this is a drug case and we're going to seize the phone. There's got to be some more articulation. Here, the search warrant names the phone, but the court's not going to take that seriously because, again, there's no articulation in the search warrant as to why the phone would have evidence on it. So the officers in the house find all these guns, find all these drugs. They find them in Davis's room. They find his wallet. They find his ID. They find a shotgun. They find a drug all within the Davis's bedroom. And they seize his phone. Is that okay? And here, in this case, in the Davis case from last week, the court says, yes, the law enforcement officers lawfully seized his phone as an instrumentality of drug trafficking found in plain view. Because in this case, the officers executing the search had probable cause to associate the phone with criminal activity. What was it in this case that gave the officers probable cause to seize the phone? Because again, they're not seizing it under the warrant. They're seizing it under plain view, which means they had to have probable cause to believe that it had evidence of a crime and were seizing it in a place where they lawfully were allowed to be. Well, they were lawfully allowed to be there because they were looking for guns and ammunition. But here the court points out that the phone was inside the residence, and so therefore it was necessarily in the place they were allowed to be for the guns and ammunition. And the phone's incriminating character was immediately apparent given the substantial quantities, of controlled substances that were found on the defendant's person in his bedroom. The court also looked at the extent to which they were packaged for distribution and the other evidence of drug trafficking found elsewhere in the common areas of the residence, and then articulated the known connection and obvious connection between drug trafficking and cell phones. So the court cautions here, it's not holding that cell phones in plain view can always be seized as instrumentalities of a crime. And that'll be important too when we talk about the Hudson case in a minute from Virginia. The nature of the alleged crime and the totality of the evidence are critical considerations. In this case, the court said, though, that the seizure was justified because the officers found the phone together with substantial evidence of drug trafficking, a crime that inherently involves coordination between multiple individuals. And so the court makes an interesting analogy here, and the analogy the court makes is to drug paraphernalia, like a glass pipe. There's a case called U.S. versus Runner where the defendant challenges the seizure of a glass pipe and says, you know, you can't just see, the glass pipe wasn't named in the search warrant, police seized it because they said it was in plain view, and its incriminating character was immediately apparent. And the defendant said, well, how so? It's a glass pipe. What's unlawful about possessing a glass pipe? Well, here the court says, its incriminating nature has to be considered in context. And so the court writes here, and I'm quoting the court, a phone is an everyday object, like a kitchen scale, whose predominant purpose is not criminal. But a scale found together with evidence, like bank records, of a crime not typically associated with the use of scales, like tax fraud, that doesn't adopt an incriminating character. In other words, just because I find a digital scale next to bank records and I'm doing a search warrant for tax fraud doesn't mean, oh, therefore I can seize a digital scale. But a digital scale found together with small baggies, large quantities of controlled substances, and firearms can adopt an incriminating character. Can become incriminating. So in other words, you know, there, sure, I'm seizing the digital scale because now it's evidence. The court here says, so too can a cell phone. But for a cell phone to be seized in plain view, the additional evidence or indicators of criminality have significant work to do to establish probable cause. Again, like the Griffith case, the court here is saying, a phone itself is not necessarily incriminating, and it's not necessarily evidence. You don't necessarily have probable cause to seize it just because it's a phone. But on the other hand, if it's next to, again, lots of baggies packaged for distribution, large quantities of controlled substances, packaging material, cutting materials, and so on, well, now we've got probable cause to think that the phone has incriminating evidence on it. And importantly, and I want to end on this note before we turn to the Hudson case, the court also says, notice that that gives the law enforcement officers the authority to seize the phone, but not necessarily to search it. At that point, we need to write a second search warrant to search the phone. And that's exactly what the officers did in this case. Once they seized the phone, they then got a search warrant to give them the authority to search the phone. And that court found that that was the lawful way to do that. Because remember, we're not seizing the phone in this case based on the first search warrant or anything that was in the first search warrant. So we're seizing it under plain view. So that sets up a really interesting comparison, I think, to a case from all the way back in July from the Virginia Court of Appeals. This is a case called Commonwealth versus Hudson. Actually, it's and Hudson is a case from Richmond, from the city of Richmond, back in July. Now, this is an unpublished case, which means that it's not controlling, but it is still influential. And it's a case in the city of Richmond where the defendant was a passenger in a car with four other people. Both the defendant and another person in the car had outstanding warrants. Police observed the car, and they stopped the car, arresting both the defendant and the other passenger who had outstanding warrants. And when they searched the defendant, they found that he was carrying a digital scale with white powdery substance on it, and they ran a dog around the car. The dog alerted on the car indicated the presence of illegal drugs, and the police began to search the car. Inside of the car, police find three handguns. They find marijuana packaged for sale, and this was during a time when marijuana was illegal to sell. Actually, it's still illegal right now. And six phones, some of which were claimed by the car's five occupants. Now, four of the phones were in a single bag, but the occupants only claimed three of those phones. One of the seized phones, which hadn't been claimed, had a picture of the defendant as the lock screen. And the defendant never claimed any of the phones, nor was he carrying a phone at the time that he was arrested. So the police seized the phone, and they obtained a search warrant for it. And they also get a search warrant for his toll records from T-Mobile. And ultimately, the defendant is indicted for a murder and his involvement with the murder. So the phone is got evidence regarding the murder on it. The defendant moved to suppress the seizure of the phone, and the trial court here granted the motion to suppress. The trial court reasoned that although the officers lawfully conducted the search under the automobile exception, in other words, yeah, sure, they, you know, found a drug scale on him, the drug scale has residue, they run a dog around the car, the dog alerts, so sure, they searched the car, lawfully seized the guns and so on, lawfully seized the marijuana package for sale, but the officers didn't have lawful authority to seize the phone that they seized. And so the court suppresses the seizure of the phone and then subsequently the search warrant obtained for the phone because it was unlawfully seized. And the Commonwealth appealed. And here, the Court of Appeals reverses the trial court and finds that the motion to suppress was improperly granted. So notice here that the same issue, we're facing the same issue that we did in Davis, which is to say, what was the probable cause to seize the phone in plain view, right? The officers here lawfully had the authority to search the car, right? And the court here has no problem with that, right? The court finds the automobile exception to the warrant requirement, the Carroll Doctrine, provided a justification to search throughout the car for evidence of narcotics. And so that meant that the officers were lawfully in the place that they were, inside this bag, searching through and finding phones, where they find the multiple phones all in the bag together. And so it's in plain view, just like in Davis, right? And that's the requirement that California versus Acevedo says, which is you got to be lawfully looking in this place when you see the thing that you're finding in plain view. The last issue here is the same issue, is again, from California versus Acevedo, the same issue the court faces in the Davis case, which is the incriminating nature of the phone immediately apparent when the officers find the phone? That's the issue that the Court of Appeals here wants to face head on. And here, the Court of Appeals, the Virginia Court of Appeals, criticizes the trial court for focusing only on the fact that a cell phone on its own is a common, unsuspicious item. And again, remember, that goes right back to what Davis is talking about. Sure, a glass pipe is unsuspicious. A digital scale is unsuspicious on its own. But the trial court here, the court criticizes, fails to consider the totality of the circumstances, which in this case gave the officers probable cause to believe that the unclaimed phone was evidence of the crime. And here, in this case, the scale, the digital scale with the drug residue, the guns, and the marijuana all indicated or provided probable cause of drug distribution. And then, looking at the phones themselves, the officers find six phones in the car. There's only five occupants. And phones here in this case, and it's interesting because at the motion to suppress, a police officer testifies as a narcotics expert and testifies that in his training and experience, phones in conjunction with other evidence can indicate drug distribution, right? So there's not automatically, just because I have a phone doesn't mean I'm a drug dealer, but the presence of multiple phones can indicate drug distribution, and we have that evidence in the record. Again, the cell phone alone is basically a common unsuspicious item, but guns and marijuana and the number of phones, right? We have more phones than we have people. And ultimately, several phones go unclaimed. That could make an officer reasonably conclude that the unclaimed phone was evidence of a crime and seize that phone. And note here, does it mean that it's more likely than not that the phone is evidence of a crime? Doesn't matter, because that's not the standard for probable cause, right? Probable cause means a fair probability. Would an officer, would it be reasonable for an officer to conclude that evidence of a crime would be located on the phone? Would it be reasonable to believe that the phone is related to the offense of the drug distribution? That's the standard, right? And it's not a standard of more likely than not. It's simply an acknowledgement. It's simply an acknowledgement that there is a fair probability. And by the way, there is a Virginia Supreme Court case where the court had found overwhelming evidence to find guilt of a possession with intent to distribute conviction, including somebody possessing two cell phones, which indicates distribution, which in that case, the drug distribution expert testified, dealers typically use one cell phone as a drug work phone and the other as a personal phone, right? And as a law enforcement officer, that would be something that would be probably very familiar to you, right? To have one work phone and one personal phone. That's something that probably your agency may require. So again, along with drugs, right, the indication of drug distribution. If I find in one of my classrooms that one of my students has two phones, that's likely that he's a law enforcement officer, right? Doesn't give me indication of a drug distribution. But here we've got a drug dog alerting on the car. We've got a scale with drug residue. We've got marijuana package for sale, and we have multiple firearms. So in this case, the court reverses the trial court, finds that the officers did lawfully seize the phone, and as in plain view as evidence of drug distribution, and sends the case back for trial. So it remains to be seen how the case will work out, but I think that's really interesting. So what we have here then is three cases, all of which deal with the issue of, is a phone necessarily evidence of a crime? And I think it's apparent if you look at Suero, if you look at Davis, if you look at Hudson, all the cases we talked about today, that the courts are not going to just simply accept, oh, you're investigating a drug case, you can seize all phones. Or, you know, you're, if you do a traffic stop and you find drugs in the car, okay, you can seize any phone that you want to seize. That's not going to be acceptable to courts in the Fourth Circuit or in the Court of Appeals. You're going to have to be able to articulate a couple of different things. Number one, is the amount of drugs that you're finding here indicative of a distribution, an ongoing distribution operation, right? The mere fact that I have drugs that I'm going to be, you know, drugs that are a large quantity of drugs doesn't necessarily mean that it's an ongoing operation, right? I'm going to have to somehow be able to articulate that. That's number one. And this is true whether or not I'm getting a search warrant and I'm asking for authority to seize a phone, or whether I'm on a traffic stop and I'm finding drugs in the car and I'm thinking about whether to seize the phone. And it's going to help if you have some kind of expert testimony to talk about the role of phones and why would you have multiple phones? Why would a phone have evidence of drug distribution activity on it? You know, there are different things that you might want to articulate. For example, if you're finding something like fentanyl, or if you're finding cocaine or heroin, you might there want to articulate, well, I know that this person, and this person lives in Virginia, I know this person must have gotten these drugs from somewhere else because we don't grow cocaine in Virginia. We don't grow heroin in Virginia. We don't make fentanyl in Virginia. These things are made out of state. They're made sometimes out of the United States. And so somebody had to provide this, which means there has to be some kind of communication, right? That kind of articulation you might find to be helpful. So really interesting cases. We'll continue to keep an eye on this topic. It's not going away. It's only going to be a hot topic going forward. But I hope you found today to be helpful. I hope you find all of our 100 episodes so far, 101 episodes, to be helpful. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, a bunch of different podcast apps. I will try to get us on Spotify this year. That's going to be one of my goals. I wasn't able to do it last year, just ran out of time. But if you don't like the podcast, don't tell your friends. For today, that's all from me. That's all from Big E. Stay safe and don't get captured.